Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We hear a joke every Monday morning. We're also going to talk about Peggy Lipton passed away. We're going to talk about her and remember her. And then because she was part of a TV show that was uniquely countercultural, and that, of course, was the Mod Squad. And this is also the anniversary of the Cannes premiere of Easy Rider. So we're going to talk about essential great counterculture movies. And also, we're going to talk about how Chicago streets got their names and much more here. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, on Facebook. Follow us on Facebook, too, facebook.com/Nick D Show. It is Monday, and that also means it's the Monday morning movie reviews. Jim Laskowski, Eric Childress join me every Monday morning to review the new movies and talk about the weekend box office. Let's welcome the guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right.
Hey.
Eric, one more time, tell us a little bit about the Chicago Critics Film Festival again. It starts on Friday.
Yeah, we are less than a week away from the festival, and it begins on Friday with this wonderful local production called St. Francis that we really hope to get all Chicagoans down there for. It's going to be a night full of movies with women starring in them, all three movies Friday night. St. Francis, Greener Grass, both of them, which will have the filmmakers and the stars present, and then a great horror movie at midnight called The Perfection with Allison Williams that is just going to scramble people's brains a little bit. It's fantastic. But that it doesn't end there because Saturday night we have Tom Skerritt is going to be here for a 40th anniversary screening of Alien on 35mm. The Nightingale Sunday night, Jennifer Kent's follow-up to The Babadook with the star Aisley Franciosi is going to be there. Just DVR Game of Thrones that night and come and see this movie because, you know, you can record and watch something later. It's the entire week. We have filmmakers and stars all week. Jim Gaffigan is going to be there on closing night with a film called Light from Light. Lulu Wang is going to be there Monday night. And I recommend people buy their tickets now for Monday night with Lulu Wang for this great movie called The Farewell with Awkwafina. Tickets are going really fast for this movie, so I recommend people jump in on that now. Tatiana Maslany is going to be here Tuesday night with Pink Wall with director Tom Cullen and her co-star Jay Duplass. They're all going to be there Tuesday night for that film. Cannot wait for people to see that as well. So it's going to be a pretty spectacular week. And if you want to see all of these events, your best bet is to buy a pass, which are still available just for $150. You can see the entire everything that we have to offer, and you can stick around for the closing night party as well.
Okay. All right, and people can go to the website to check that out. Also, Music Box has it up on their website as well, and it begins Friday. So there you go.
Yep.
All right, let's get into the new movies. Did either of you guys see Wine Country?
No. Not yet.
No, not yet.
Okay, well, let me start off with that then. Wine Country is the it's on Netflix right now, and it was in I guess it was released in a couple of theaters as well. And this is the directorial debut of Amy Poehler. And it was written by Emily Spivey and my old friend Liz Kakowski, who used to be with, back in the day, she used to be with Barrel of Monkeys.
Well, how cool.
Yeah, and she became a writer on Saturday Night Live and sometime cast member, and obviously, you know, knows all the ladies that are involved in this. This is essentially like, a ton of really funny women who have passed through the halls of SNL hanging out together. Amy Poehler, Rachel Dratch, Anna Gasteyer, Maya Rudolph, Paula Pell, Emily Spivey, who again co-wrote the movie. Tina Fey appears in it as well. Jason Schwartzman. And it's basically about a group of women who are celebrating Rachel Dratch's character is turning 50. And so they decide that they're going to go up to Napa, spend a weekend celebrating her 50th birthday and drinking a bunch of wine and just forgetting about their families and their husbands and their kids and all that stuff and just have, you know, kind of an all-girl weekend. So with a cast like this, you're expecting a, you know, a lot of huge laughs. It's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. It's pretty cliched, and we've seen a lot of this stuff before. You know, to say it's like a counter version of Sideways, but with more characters, would be accurate, because, you know, that was about guy bonding, and this is about, you know, women bonding. And to be sure, there are some laughs in the movie, but considering the amount of talent that's on board here, I expected much more. Tina Fey plays the person who owns the house where they're staying. She comes in every once in a while, cracks a few jokes, and then leaves. Most of the jokes are about people, you know, being 50 years old and not, you know, doing what they used to do. The effects of a lot of wine on a body that's over 50 is explored as well. You know, you can obviously see the chemistry between these people. These women, they all know each other, and they're all very comfortable with each other. I just wish the script had been better, and I wish it had been a little bit more original. And there are moments in it, especially involving Maya Rudolph's character, that seem melodramatic and sort of unnecessary. But I think they wanted to add some sort of depth to it and not just make it women drinking wine, cracking jokes. They wanted to, I think, add some sort of emotion to it, and that seems added on and forced and not necessary. I'm not going to not recommend. I mean, it's on Netflix, so all you got to do is turn on your TV and you can watch it. Don't adjust your expectations, because my expectations were really, really high considering how much I love the women in this movie, and it just wasn't nearly as funny as I wish it had been. But enough laughs. Everybody in the movie is obviously very, very likable. Amy Poehler, not so strong on the directorial debut front here, but you could do worse. I was just disappointed considering how much I admire the women in this movie. That's called Wine Country, and it is available on Netflix. Okay. All right. Eric, tell us about one of the 95 Charles Manson movies that are coming out. Because there's literally three Charles Manson movies that are coming out, and this is the first of the bunch. This is Charlie Says.
Which one am I missing besides the Tarantino one?
There's another one that, what is it called? I can't remember the name of it, but it's told from the point of view of Squeaky Frome, I think.
Okay, because there's actually a fourth one that I've seen that takes place from the point of view of Sharon Tate.
What's going on here, man?
Yeah, is there an anniversary that we're missing? Is everyone, because the Tarantino's had the
well,
this
yeah,
project?
It is the anniversary, 50th anniversary, because it was 69 when it happened.
Okay, so that's happening, yeah. And I don't know if projects were getting rushed out. Tarantino thing.
It happened in August of 69.
So
I don't know. So that would be the, you know, Tarantino's movie's coming out the end of July. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this one was actually, I believe, it played at Tribeca last year. I think that's where it premiered, and it certainly has as far as credibility behind it. It was directed by Mary Harron.
Yeah.
And written by Guinevere Turner. And you prefaced the movie right by, you know, talking about how there are 95 movies about Charles Manson, not just this year, but in the past. Yeah. There have been a number of small productions, bigger productions, documentaries, et cetera, et cetera. This one focuses on the Manson girls, specifically... Leslie Van Houten was played by Hannah Murray, who was on Game of Thrones. And the movie is told in a flashback structure after the Manson girls are caught and incarcerated, and they're sort of telling, just kind of revealing their story and remembering their story with the help of a prison counselor while they're behind bars. So we get, you know, a lot of, you know, her story for the most part, and her interactions with Charles Manson, who's played by Matt Smith, who was Doctor Who at one point.
It's just so strange to me, that casting is so... Oh, you know what? Hang on a second. Eric, hang on. We got to take a break.
Sure.
All right, come back. Tell us more about this. This is the latest Charles Manson movie. And that's a weird sentence to say. The latest Charles Manson movie. Charlie Says. We'll hear more about what it's about, and we'll find out what Eric thought of it, too. We're going to take a break here. We got the news coming up, and then more movie reviews after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. We're going to be talking about counterculture, classic counterculture movies. We'll remember Peggy Lipton. We're going to talk about how some of the streets in Chicago got their names. And it's Monday, which means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. That's all coming up right here on WGN. Our phone number for talk and text is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. It is Monday morning, which means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric and Jim are with me. And before the break, Eric was telling us a little bit about this movie, Charlie Says. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, and Jim, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
All right, so Eric, go ahead, continue. Are you talking about Charlie Says?
Yes, so Leslie Van Houten, Hannah Murray, is remembering her time basically on the Manson camp, ranch, however, whatever it was called, and, you know, how, you know, Charlie Manson was, you know, he was, you know, in some ways a hypnotist in a way. You know, he was a cult leader. He encouraged them to open up their minds and to free themselves of their past, they free themselves from their families, cut themselves off, basically dedicate everything to him, and, you know, in the interim, you know, have orgies and, you know, sing his bad songs topless and so all these kind of really, you know, demeaning things that, you know, didn't serve them but served him, but made them think that they were serving themselves as well. So as I mentioned, you know, this movie was directed by Mary Harron and written by Guinevere Turner, and it's kind of, in spirit, represents kind of an interesting trilogy that they've made. Obviously, with American Psycho, it's kind of one of the ultimate stories of the misogyny, you know, not just the 80s, but that movie, you know, holds up even more beautifully today because of that. The Notorious Betty Page, which was a movie about a woman that was sort of taking back that power and making it her own, but at the same time was kind of crucified for it, you know, due to religious reasons and things. And now you have the story of women who completely give themselves over to a really horrible male person and are essentially destroyed by it. But going back to your initial statement, Nick, that it doesn't feel like the movie finds a way to really separate itself from all of these other tales that we've seen about Charlie Manson. You know, everyone has a kind of interest, a different, or tries to have a different spin on what this guy was and, you know, who these women were. I think Matt Smith does a pretty good job playing Manson. I think it's a very interesting performance. And with the women themselves are kind of interchangeable, which is kind of an unfortunate way to look at a story like this. You know, maybe that's part of the point, them having their individuality taken away from them. But it doesn't really grow on you at all. It doesn't really kind of give you an idea of exactly, you know, what was really behind these women. You know, what was really behind them, other than just being kind of dupes to, you know, a really kind of enigmatic personality, even though he was, you know, a moron and a really bad songwriter. So I haven't seen, just again, so many stories about Charles Manson. If to sort of put them together in a blender and something came out, I couldn't tell you which one I was looking at. So it's kind of unfortunate. It's not necessarily a bad film, you know, and I get why they'd be attracted to the story. But he said there's been so many efforts to try to explain this character away, some in ghoulish ways, some in, you know, trying to tackle it from an intellectual perspective like this. But even taken from the perspective of the women, I don't think this movie really offered anything really new into the story.
Okay. Well, that's too bad, considering, you know, the people behind it. These two
right.
women have made such great films in the past. That's too bad. All right, well, that's Charlie Says. It's out right now and not recommended by Eric. All right, Jim, tell us about Long Day's Journey Into Night.
Okay, well, this is not a movie about Charles Manson. And it's also not to be confused with Eugene O'Neill's play or any of the screen adaptations of that play. This is actually kind of a box office phenomenon in China. We follow a man named Luau who returns to his hometown of Kaili after the death of his father. He's haunted by memories of his past, including a rather complex relationship with a woman named Wan Chai Wen, who disappeared many years ago on the eve of them running away together, or at least they hope they could. So Luau revisits old acquaintances and reflects on the impact of the people he has lost in his life. There's a really interesting set piece involving reconnecting with the mother of a deceased friend. And from that point on, it really does become very meditative. It's mostly just about Luau trying to find this long-lost love of his and the journey that he takes to locate her, including coming across somebody who looks a whole lot like the person that he's seeking out. And there's a lot of, this is kind of like an amateur investigation, really, where he's wandering around and he's trying to get some clues as to where this person could be. And he eventually discovers that Wan became a rather popular karaoke singer at one point, or at the very least, someone with her same name did. But as he kind of closes in on her whereabouts by following the troupe that she sings with, Luau begins to question what information is real and what he thinks to be the actual truth. And yeah, that's pretty much all there is for plot, because this is a very sort of dreamlike noir that stands out for a couple of reasons here. It's another riff on Hitchcock's Vertigo, but it's really a marvel kind of on a technical level. The second half of this film, and one of the main reasons I wanted to check it out, it contains an unbroken 59-minute shot. And it's a sight to behold, because I honestly don't know how they pulled it off. But it's very meditative. That's the thing about this movie. I mean, it even has that unbroken shot that I mentioned here is actually shown in 3D in certain theaters. And, you know, you don't expect a meditative noir to be, you know, shown in 3D. The director here, B. Gan, he just turned 30 years old, but he's inspired by, like, Tarkovsky and Wong Kar-wai and Terrence Malick. He likes these incredible long takes and fractured memories and just really interesting ways to tell kind of a minimal story. His last film, Kaili Blues, was quite good, and this one is another very interesting kind of intoxicating experience. It unfolds kind of like a flashback or a dream that is, you know, often kind of disconnected, so you have to adjust yourself at times. And I will say that there are pacing issues because it is very slow. But I was drawn in by the experience. I'm a fan of all the directors he cites as influences, so that kind of helps. But it's really just a gorgeous film to look at, and the cinematography and set designs are just phenomenal throughout the entire film. But yeah, I mean, the message of the film is kind of familiar in that it's about, you know, you can't really go back home and expect it to feel like home, and, you know, that memories are partly experienced but also reinvented over time. So I know a lot of these ideas have been, showcased before in other films, but this kind of recontextualizes them in a very calm, very hypnotic way. From a filmmaking standpoint, this is kind of jaw-dropping at times, like I said, with that 59-minute unbroken shot. But it does move at a very languid pace, so you have to be a patient film-goer for this one. I'm definitely recommending A Long Day's Journey into Night.
Okay, and that's only playing at the River East, if you want to check that out. All right.
Yes.
Okay. And it's a long film too, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. But like I said, that shot it's funny because it takes 75 minutes to drop the title card.
Wow. And you're like, oh, yeah. So it does take its time. And then once you get to the transition for the second half, like I mentioned, it's a sight to behold. It really is.
Okay. All right. You guys hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's called Long Day's Journey in Tonight, and it's playing at the River East right now. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we got more movie reviews with Eric and Jim right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We're going to talk about counterculture classic movies and much more. Phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at Nick D Show. Same thing with Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Monday morning means it's the Monday morning movie reviews. We'll also talk box office with Eric. Eric and Jim are here. Let's get back to the reviews. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Eric, tell us about Roll Red Roll.
Okay. Well, this is a documentary that details a recent story about the Steubenville rape case. A couple of high school football players were arrested when they were suspected of raping a virtually unconscious girl at a party. The movie takes us through kind of almost sometimes unprecedented looks at the police investigation. We actually see a lot of footage of actual police interrogation of suspects. Interviews more than, say, interrogations. It's not like putting them in the room and putting the screws to them. It's just police interviews with students who were at the party, who knew the people involved. And, you know, there's a story of this town that, you know, as the story broke, obviously people don't want to believe it. It sort of spins, you know, in the worst possible ways. There's a revolving sports radio announcer that we hear on the soundtrack for the entire movie that is basically the very definition of victim blaming. That's really kind of hard to listen to. But then, you know, bloggers start getting involved. One particular reporter who has worked a number of cases like this starts doing some investigating, and it starts kind of snowballing through social media. And then another wrinkle gets involved when the group Anonymous actually hacks into certain files and releases some really horrific video and audio that basically kind of turns the case over. So this is an interesting story, both as in real life and as a documentary. Because, I mean, the story itself is so horrendous, and you see really disturbing video and audio, mostly the audio, the way that these kids are talking about what has happened or what is about to happen while the Jane Doe is basically unconscious in the room. And the way that this sort of rape culture has developed over time and is so prevalent out there that these kids, it's kind of remarkable to behold how these kids just have I mean, the filter is just gone. Just any sort of moral clarity is just gone in situations like this, and it's really kind of disturbing to watch. But at the same time, the filmmaking itself is a little bit lacking. I mean, it tells a story pretty cleanly if you just want to hear about the story itself, which is really more than enough to keep you involved. But the spin-offs of what they're uncovering, not just the rape culture and the victim blaming, but again, why these kids feel so emboldened to talk the way that they do, what this culture really was. I mean, there's the interview of the actual coach is quite disturbing. So you can draw a little bit of a through line there. But there seemed like there'd be a little bit a better documentary would have really kind of delved into that kind of stuff and really kind of drawn that out and seen that as part of the the fuller story. The filmmaking is a little bit spotty, but the story itself and how it affects you definitely gets my recommendation.
Okay, and it's playing at Facets.
Yes.
So if you want to check that out. Okay, that is Roll Red Roll. All right, Jim, tell us about Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
Okay, so I'm definitely not up to snuff on the whole Pokemon lore, but I believe this was inspired by a video game of the same name. And it's brought to the big screen here by director Rob Letterman. And we basically just dive right in and discover that humans are living and habitating with these cute furry creatures and monsters. We're all sharing a joyful reality in this live-action reimagining of this Pokemon universe. We start off with young Tim, played by Justice Smith, who has just turned 21, and he has kind of a dislike for these Pokemon creatures. He hasn't been able to connect with any, very similarly to Bob Hoskins' Private Eye, who wasn't a fan of Toons, of course, in Roger Rabbit. So he's just kind of a little bit of a curmudgeon, but he's kind of focused on his career as an insurance salesman. And he meets up early on with his friend Jack, and you know they're out sort of like trying to find a Pokemon for him, but just they're both unsuccessful. And he gets word of an unexpected tragedy involving his dad, who worked as a private investigator out in Rhyme City. And his father's Pokemon partner is the beloved title character named Pikachu, voiced by Ryan Reynolds. And Pikachu may or may not know a thing or two about the accident, and that's basically the central mystery here to kind of solve a murder and provide an arc for both Pikachu and Tim, almost starting out as kind of like a buddy cop comedy that does kind of turn into something more. And unlike other humans, Tim can understand every word that Pikachu says, while Pikachu actually has no memory of what happened, and you know this whole thing comes into play. So they embark on an investigation to find out what caused the accident, along with learning about a mysterious creature named Mewtwo, and also the mystery involves an illicit purple gas. An aspiring reporter named Lucy, who yearns for her big break at the news network CNN that happens to be owned by Howard Clifford, played by Bill Nighy, who is essentially the city's billionaire mastermind, who once had this dream of Pokemon and people living together in close proximity and harmony. So he may or may not play a role in this mystery as well, which then gradually evolves into this grand conspiracy involving all of our main players. So yeah, I'm not a Pokemon guy, and my guess, I think this media franchise kind of hit its stride just as I was in my 20s, and I paid no mind. I just had no idea what this craze was all about. But I was a little bit curious about this, just to see if the filmmakers could somehow recreate the spirit of something like Roger Rabbit, only for a new generation of Pokemon fans. And as I was watching this, I couldn't help but think of the way my parents must have felt when they took me to see the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. There's just a lot of inside jokes, characters popping up, references that only, you know, young fans, young dedicated fans of the cartoon would recognize. So I'm not a particular fan of Pokemon. So I watched this feeling very perplexed when, you know, like characters would pop out and people would get excited. And I was like, I don't know who that character is. You're supposed to tell me, even if it involves some exposition. I have no idea, you know, who that is. But there's some bright spots here. I mean, the cinematography, the fact that this was shot on film, and the production design are actually, visually appealing. There's a lot of neon, and at times it's raining a lot, so I was thinking of, like, Blade Runner. But, Yeah, I mean, like, the various Pokemon are kind of the A-listers here. I mean, the humans are really just, they're just support structures. They're really not very memorable in any way. They kind of exist just to move the storyline forward. But, again, I didn't think this was a complete waste of time. It just did very little for me in terms of being consistently entertaining from beginning to end. But that could also be due to my lack of knowledge of this universe. So I'm not going to call this a bad movie. I'm pretty sure fans of Pokemon and Pikachu will enjoy it. But I'm also not going to fully recommend it either, because it really didn't do a whole lot to stand out from the crowd, other than just being occasionally cute and silly. If you're a fan, I'd say go out of curiosity. But if you're not, I would stay home.
All right. Guys, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Pokemon Detective Pikachu. And Jim says, yeah, the fans will like it, but maybe not anybody else. Okay, a couple more movies we got to review, and then we'll talk about the box office with Eric. And we'll do that right after we break. Everybody, how you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's jokey time. And we were going to talk about counterculture movies and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. So we're back. Movie reviews. That's what we do every Monday morning. Eric Childress, Jim Laskowski joined me, and let's get him back in. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, so you guys did not see The Hustle?
No.
Okay. No.
All right, well, I did. this is essentially a female version of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, but to actually mention the title of that movie in the same sentence as this movie is an unbelievable insult, because this is a terrible movie. Rebel Wilson is sort of this low-level con artist who likes to get money, con money out of men. I'm not really sure what the deal is. She's got a phone with a hot girl's picture on it, and she claims that she needs money for her sister to get a boob job, and then that's how she gets money out of guys.
She's doing like a Spanish prisoner on them?
It's just ridiculous. I mean, I don't even know. So anyway, she's this low-level con artist who, on a train, meets Anne Hathaway, who is the highbrow con artist who does really complicated cons and stings and has like a team with her, another woman and an older guy who plays like her valet. And they are a team that they do the big cons. They go for the big money. So Rebel Wilson just shows up and wants to, you know, like the Steve Martin character in the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels movie, wants to learn from the Michael Caine character, which is the Anne Hathaway character, and how to be a better con artist. So they're going to work together to go after a single mark. So they go after this guy, and I can't even remember the actor's name who plays the, is it Timothy Simons? Is that who it is? No. No, he's no. He's
so Timothy Simons from Veep.
Yeah, well, the guy who directed this directed several episodes of Veep.
Oh,
which is just huge disappointment. But anyway, so they've got go through several marks, but they get their eye on this young guy who is a millionaire because he invented an app called You Burnt, which they owe money to Seth Meyers. So they're gonna, that's the mark, and then they bet each other who will get $500,000 from this guy first, and whoever does wins the bet. So that's the idea. And so they try to one up each other with their con, and then of course Rebel Wilson kind of falls for the guy and doesn't want to take the money from him. And then there's that. Okay, so that's the basic plot of this movie. This is an awful movie. Like really, really awful. There is not a moment, there's not one smile in this movie. I'm absolutely convinced the only reason Anne Hathaway did this movie was for the wardrobe. That's the only thing I can think of, because she looks great in the movie and she wears a lot of really cool dresses and costumes and stuff. Rebel Wilson, I like Rebel Wilson, I really do, but she's unbelievably annoying in this movie and not funny at all. Anne Hathaway, I don't know what the hell she's doing. It just, maybe it was like, because a lot of the movie takes place in France, so maybe that's why she took it. I don't know. I can't figure this out. But it is a truly awful movie with unlikable characters. You didn't care about anything that was happening. Some kind of a forced romantic subplot between Rebel Wilson and the main guy. That doesn't work. Dean Norris shows up for one scene. I don't know what's going on there. If people want to see this movie, just rent or go back to Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, because that's a really funny movie. And this is just absolutely awful on every single level. The audience that we saw it with, we all just kind of walked out afterwards. Like, it was like a funeral, it's just like the movie ended. And we're like, oh God. But the guy who directed it is one of the producers and has directed many, many episodes of Veep, which is a great show and a very funny show. And I don't know how this happened. I have no idea how this whole thing happened. Not good. Really, really not good.
I think he directed the finale tonight.
Oh, he did?
I think so, because I remember seeing his name, somewhere.
His name is Chris Addison.
Oh, okay. I thought David Mandel might have.
Oh no! This is not that guy. No.
Chris Addison. Yeah. Okay, then no, I don't think it was him.
Okay, all right. And don't say anything, because I've got it on my DVR.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see it. I can't believe the show's over.
I know.
It's just so sad, because it's such a funny show.
Be so happy.
The Hustle, terrible, absolutely terrible. All right, Eric, tell us about, we have to pronounce it correctly now. Tell us about Tolkien, because
Tolkien?
That's how you're supposed to say it. It's Tolkien.
Why? Mm-hmm.
That's all I know is that's how you pronounce his name, I guess. I've been saying Tolkien for my entire life.
Okay.
But then I see this movie, and I see all the press around it, and they've gone out of their way to make sure people say Tolkien. So that's
okay.
That's how
I saw Tolkien. I say that with all derision on purpose. We're talking about J.R. Tolkien, the writer of The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings stories. And this movie takes us through his childhood. Nicholas Holt plays Tolkien. My God, how he was orphaned as a young boy. He went through boarding school. He fell in love with a woman, a fellow orphan, played by Lily Collins. The movie kind of takes us through childhood, boarding school, and up and through his experiences in World War One, which is sort of treated as this kind of flash forward wraparound type story. Everyone is kind of sitting there waiting to, how is this life going to influence one of the greatest works of the 20th century. And this movie never really quite answers that question. Leading up to seeing this movie, I've been enjoying everyone on social media, kind of basically expecting this movie to sort of be a kind of Shakespeare / George Lucas in love kind of story, where Tolkien shows up at a at boarding school and he's failing, and the teacher says, "You shall not pass," things like that is the kind of things I've been seeing on social media all week, and I'm just like, okay, I'm just wondering, if the movie goes down that route, is it going to be kind of considered a little too jokey, a little too precious for its own good? This movie kind of takes the opposite step in that it doesn't really give you the great sense of what's going to eventually influence the writing of these stories. And they kind of drop things in there. You know, they see him as a kid playing with swords, and, you know, he has a group of friends that, you know, could be considered the hobbits at some point. They're quote-unquote fellowship. You know, the scenes in World War One are occasionally interspersed with, instead of flamethrowers, he sees dragons, you know, breathing fire, and he's looking for a lost soldier, a friend of his, and he's helped by a guy named Sam. You know, so these things that just kind of, you know, are kind of interspersed throughout the story. And then it's like the final scene of the movie, he goes, yeah, I've been working on the story, telling his kids, and it's about adventures and quests and all these things. And he's just like, okay, so he's just wrapping this whole thing up in a bow, and then seeing him write the first sentences of The Hobbit. You know, I would rather the movie start with him writing the first sentences of The Hobbit, and then leading him through this journey of writing, you know, these two sort of masterworks, and how The Lord of the Rings just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and this kind of the obsession that it took him to write this thing, and the fans that eventually grew out of it. I think there's a much more interesting story there than the backstory to, you know, leading up to the conclusion that we all know is coming. This movie, I couldn't really stand watching it, and it just was not interesting in the slightest to me. I wish it had started at the end, funny enough.
Okay. All right, guys, hang on. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll hear what Jim thought of Tolkien, and I'll tell you what I thought of it, too, after we take this break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It's Monday morning, so my dad's going to call in and tell a joke and much more. 312-981-7200. And it is Monday morning, which means we're in the middle of the Monday morning movie reviews with Eric and Jim. And Eric is going to stick around, and we're going to talk box office numbers as well. So let's get these guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Jim, what did you think of Tolkien?
Oh, boy. Wow. Yeah, this didn't do a whole lot for me. You know, it's funny because my girlfriend and I, we went Tuesday night to the special screening where they had a live streaming cast of Stephen Colbert interviewing Nicholas Hoult and Lily Collins. And the first question he asked was, okay, what is it, Tolkien or Tolkien?
And, they were on Colbert's show last week. Nicholas Hoult and Lily Collins. They were on a show. I think it was Thursday night they were on. He kept calling him Tolkien, and they had to like correct him 900 times or anything. And it's really funny because I don't think there is a bigger fan of Lord of the Rings than Stephen Colbert. I don't think
Absolutely.
There is a bigger fan.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in The Hobbit. You know, I mean, they put him in The Hobbit,
right.
And you know, he is just such an unapologetic Lord of the Rings geek that you would think that he would know how to pronounce the guy's name. He's somebody who's that big. But anyway, yeah. So you saw it on Tuesday. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, I really wanted to warm up to this because, of course, I am a huge fan of the Lord of the Rings, and it is really just a paint by numbers biopic, and I really just couldn't, you know, there was not a whole lot here that was entertaining. I mean, Eric was talking about, you know, being deadly serious, and I was like, well, yeah, lighten up. You know, I mean, like, at least Derek Jacobi shows up as a linguistics professor, and, you know, when he's on screen, it's a joy to see. But, yeah, I mean, there's just little to no surprises. The performances here are pretty mediocre, and yeah, you'd be better off reading a book or watching a documentary about this incredible writer that happened to create one of the greatest series of books ever conceived. You know, there's a nice sense of camaraderie among the four young boys that sort of band together to form the gang. And I like that they're embracing the arts in hopes of changing the world. And, you know, that's a nice, sweet sentiment in general. But, yeah, I mean, Nicholas Holt really didn't do much for me here outside of maybe a scene towards the end when he meets with the mother of one of his closest friends. But, yeah, and in fact, I rarely want to quote other critics, but I think Matt Singer put it best when he said that he's quoting something here that I think we all know and love. "You're going to have to give him a moment, son. Tolkien has to think about his entire life before he writes The Lord of the Rings." And this is definitely the kind of film that Walk Hard kind of satirized. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's very disappointing. There's not a whole lot of insight here to an incredible author's life. So I am also not recommending Tolkien.
Yeah, I was hugely disappointed in this. I didn't learn a thing. I learned nothing.
Right.
And you're right. This is a slog through. You know what I mean? This is just so slow and so deadly serious. I just wanted Nicholas Holt at some point to just get some silver spray paint and just spray paint his mouth and go nuts. That's what I kept wanting. So
into the West.
I mean, it would have been so much more entertaining. But on a serious note, I was disappointed because I really wanted to know more about this writer. You know, whom I've come to love, and you don't get any of that on this. It is as generic a biopic as you can possibly imagine. And the life that they show in this movie is just not that interesting. And I don't believe that. I don't believe he led an uninteresting life. I really don't. You know, a man of capable of writing something as beautiful and magnificent as these books, I think probably had a much more interesting life than what we see here. It is absolutely by the numbers. It is as ABC of a biopic as you can possibly imagine. And I don't even know if Tolkien fans are even going to care once they see it. I just know that a lot of people are going to be disappointed if they are fans of this and want to know about this guy's life and get some sort of, you know, background and you know, just anything about this guy that you want to learn something new. You're not going to learn it. And yes, every once in a while, there's a couple of cast members that show up that are actually kind of fun to watch. But for the most part, this is a massive disappointment to me, and I learned nothing about what, you know, I consider to be one of the best writers that's ever written. So very, very big disappointment right there. Okay.
Indeed.
All right. So next week. Oh, yeah. Don't mess with his dog. That's all I'm saying. Don't mess with his dog.
That's all you need. That's all you need.
I can't wait to see that movie. We're talking about, of course, John Wick Chapter 3. And then, of course, Eric, you're going to be really busy over at the Music Box all week. And
yes.
That starts on Friday. And are you going to be with us Sunday night, Monday morning?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, by the time I get home, it's usually time to, you know, talk to you on the show.
Okay,
so.
Cool. All right, man. All right. And so we'll talk to you next week. And everybody go to the Music Box starting on Friday and check out the website. One more time, give everybody the website so they can check out the schedule.
Yes, it's ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com.
Okay. Jim, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, can't wait for that festival, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right, there you go. There's Jim. Eric, let's talk box office numbers, shall we? All right.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, the Pikachu movie made money.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number one, again, of course, obviously, is Avengers Endgame. Where are we going here? It made $63
million. $63 million, the fourth best third weekend in history. It is, by next weekend, it will have passed Avatar on the all-time domestic list.
Amazing.
Though, it looks like the way it's going that it might actually miss The Force Awakens for domestic all-time champion.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's starting to fall behind a little bit. The Force Awakens by day 17 had $20 million more. Things are going to start to even up a little bit. It's already starting to trail weekend by weekend. But, you know, it's probably still headed for somewhere probably close to $900 million. And it's got $2.48 billion. It's made that in 19 days.
Jeez.
It's only just a little over $300 million away from beating Avatar for the all-time worldwide champ list.
That really is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, it keeps going. Pokemon Detective Pikachu pretty impressive, $58 million. I got to say, I was pretty impressed by that.
Yeah, it's, I think it's a little bit more than I thought I was going to start with. It was not too far off, though. This is, I mean, in March they were thinking $75 million. Like last week they were thinking only $40 million. So it kind of split the difference.
Yeah.
So this thing's going to be headed for somewhere, you know, like between like $140 and $170 million, somewhere in that range.
Okay. The Hustle, $13.5 million. That's not good.
No, not particularly.
Yeah. And it's terrible. Absolutely terrible. Number four, The Intruder, $6.6 million, $20 million, almost $21 million. And how long has that been out? 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, not good. Five, man, this is so disappointing. Long Shot, $6.1 million.
This is the bad one here.
$19 million in 2 weeks. That's so disappointing because it's such a good movie.
Yeah, I thought at the very least we could say that it was going to beat The Intruder this week. But I mean, The Intruder beat it 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah,
it's such a failure of marketing from Lionsgate to blow this movie.
Yeah, it's too bad. What are you looking at numbers-wise? Is John Wick going to be number one?
It's going to be really close, I think. I'm right now kind of, if you depress me to it, I think John Wick is going to take number one next weekend. The number two opened with $30 million. I'm thinking that this one probably somewhere around $35-36 million. And if Endgame comes down enough, I think it's going to be somewhere in the vicinity of $30-40 million next week.
Yeah.
Then it's going to be close.
It'll be close. I agree. It'll be close. But you know what? These John Wick movies get more popular. I mean, people have discovered them, you know, as they've gone along. Like the first one did okay.
Right.
The second one did well. And you know, obviously through, you know, video and stuff, that, you know, the fans of these movies have really become very passionate. And so,
big time.
Yeah. So,
and Keanu is just like a little god now.
Yeah.
You notice, this? He's kind of like the next Goldblum in a way.
Yeah.
The way people are responding to him. And I'm okay with that.
So am I. I love Keanu, man. I know you do. Always have.
I've been critical of the Keanu over the years, but I like him.
Yeah. He's a great, you know? Yeah, he seems like a wonderful man. That's all
I'm saying.
Yes, he does. Okay. All right, Eric. Well, listen, man, have fun at the fest. I'll probably pop in at some point over the weekend.
Sounds great, man.
Okay, man. Take care.
Thanks.
There you go. Eric Childress, he'll be back again next week. We'll talk about what's going on at the Chicago Critics Film Festival, The Music Box, which starts on Friday, and we'll review all the new movies, including John Wick Chapter 3. And that's all coming up next week. All right, let's take a quick break here on 720 WGN.